Hello, it's Doug Brown joining Brendan on Unusual Sources. Well, we have Kevin McKay on the line, I believe. Kevin, are you there?
I am.
Okay, well, lots have happened in the past 5 days, Kevin. You know, the members being forced to vote on the crappy offer that you had. And what was it, 86% or something like that?
Yeah, it was quite incredible. So it was last Thursday, November 16th, the results of the vote came in. And so this was an offer that basically, you know, management had kind of walked away from the table and forced a vote on it. It was an offer that had serious concessions in it, directly related to the issue of full-time staffing. So it was really, it was a little bit outrageous that they forced a vote on this, but there was an indication from the employer side that they actually thought they were going to win this vote, which just shows how incredibly out of touch they are, because 95% of eligible voters voted, and that is, as anyone who follows elections, that is an unheard of level of participation. And out of those 95% of eligible voters who voted, 86% rejected the offer. So it was an incredible incredible display of solidarity on behalf of our membership, and also just that they understood the issues.
Yeah, could not have been more decisive. What part of 86% do they not understand?
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so that the offer was rejected. And yep. then the province jumped in with legislation. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. And, you know, so what happened? It was a bit of a roller coaster because on the Thursday, like I said, we had the results of the vote came in a little after 11 a.m. And then we were hoping, the faculty team, that, okay, this means finally the College Employer Council, our counterparts, would sit down at the table and would be ready to get a deal done. And so we were fully anticipating there to be bargaining later in that day. There was a meeting with Premier Wynne and Minister Deb Matthews from the Ministry of Advanced Education and Skills Development. So they called a meeting for that afternoon. It was with representatives from our team and the employer's team. And, you know, from our understanding, the Premier and the Minister kind of read the Riot Act and said they wanted this resolved. And then both teams were sent to, actually went to the Ministry offices. We had about 3 hours then to negotiate, and the Premier said, you know, it's time to be creative, it's time to get it done, and basically the employer just ran out the clock on that in sort of the last of many very cynical moves. And it was 5 o'clock was sort of our deadline for that period of bargaining. And when nothing came of it, then the legislation, we heard about it right after that. So, we really, after that really historic vote, we didn't really get any time or opportunity to see what could be done at the table, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's quite incredible that, you know, the legislation, you know, back you have to go back to work. But, you know, in labor relations, basically you've taken all the pressure off the employer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's entirely conceivable that this was the plan of the college council from the get-go, is that they simply wouldn't seriously bargain on any of the key issues that faculty brought forward, and that they were just going to basically, you know, sit on their hands and wait to be forced. And so it is. It's troubling that way. I mean, the one thing that shades this a little bit is that the province did get involved earlier on in terms of this provincial task force. And so this was, I think, an attempt by the province to resolve things. This is a couple of weeks ago. It was, something that the union proposed, but the province definitely backed it. And really, we think the province dragged the council to the table in terms of the task force. So, you know, there is that. So, I mean, I think the province's role has been a little bit ambivalent that way, in the sense that the task force, I think, is positive, and we're looking forward to engaging in that. And yet also, you know, we're not happy with the back-to-work legislation.
Yeah, so in the meantime, then, everything status quo? Is that the situation?
Yeah, well, so, you know, one of the problems always with with back to work legislation is just, you know, what's the return to work protocol and how are the outstanding issues dealt with? And I think the provincial NDP, Andrea Horvath, Peggy Sattler, other members of the caucus did really important work by stopping the immediate passing of the legislation, by prompting some debate, you know, because there were some things that ended up getting into the legislation that, we're unhappy with. There are some things that that really limit how the arbitrator can look at the outstanding issues. There's, you know, provisions for cost, you know, and looking at the economic state of the province and all these, you know, we kind of call them weasel words or weasel language that basically enables them to cry poor, you know, if there's any remedy that the arbitrator may seek to give the faculty. So, you know, that's a problem with the legislation, and that's a problem with how it all played out. And like I said, I'm glad the NDP did what they did to try and provoke some debate and some change. But now, moving forward, that's where we're going to arbitration, so we're very much focused on that, the faculty team. We are preparing all of our evidence and arguments. We think we have very strong evidence and arguments to back up our claims. And so, and that's a process that unfolds fairly quickly, actually. The arbitrator has to be determined in the next couple of days, I think by the end of this week. And then they have 30 days to hold the hearing. So the hearing will be held before the end of the year.
Okay, and who is the arbiter?
You know what, we don't know yet. So this is obviously an important piece of the puzzle. And what we have done from the faculty side is we've submitted some names, and the college's council will do the same. If we can agree on an arbitrator, then that's great. And if not, one will be appointed by the ministry.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so, you know, that's something, like I said, by the end of the week we'll have some clarity there. And I think, you know, that's important, but at the end of the day, I think that the issues that are coming to the table on our side we feel they're so clear that we feel confident, regardless of who the arbitrator is, that, you know, the merit of the case we're going to make is really self-evident.
Yeah, when you were on the show a month ago, you were presenting some of the statistics. I mean, just comparing Ontario community colleges to other provinces,
yes.
and at that time you're looking at BC, but apparently we're the lowest in terms of provincial support for post-secondary education.
Yep, we are. Yeah, for years Ontario has been the lowest. The way they calculate that statistic is government dollars per full-time equivalent post-secondary student, right? That's just how they break it down. And Ontario is the lowest out of the entire country, which, again, is one of the richest provinces. It just doesn't make sense. Years of underfunding, right? I think that's what this round of negotiations has been about, is highlighting what happens when you bleed a public service for, you know, for decades, really. And then, you know, you expect the wheels to not fall off. And I think faculty, you know, we're a little bit, you know, the canaries in the coal mine, so to speak, and saying, listen, we can see things slipping, whether it's the contract faculty, you know, relying on over 70% contract, or whether it's, you know, the good academic judgment of professors being overrun by managers just looking to cut costs. You know, these were signs of serious crisis in the system. And so, you know, that's what comes of underfunding. So we're hoping that the task force may actually address the funding issue, and also that the task force will address the need for a stable complement of full-time faculty as well. So, and that process is sort of tight timelines too, but it'll be coming back with a report in May, so a little bit after the arbitration decision.
Okay, so the first 30 days is to pull together the information.
Yes.
Okay. And then, the arbiter, you know, you'd hope that they would not have a bias.
Yeah, exactly. That is the hope. And I think, you know, to be honest, if it comes to appointing an arbitrator, there's a fair amount of scrutiny on the province right now, and I think that bodes well for... I think they would feel the need to appoint someone who is legitimately perceived as a neutral party. So, you know, we're hopeful that way. Because again, I think my hope, Doug, is that through this process that everyone has come to realize that, you know, the system was, you know, in crisis, and that there needed to be significant change. So I'd like to think the various parties involved, whether it be the colleges or the province or even just the general public, would realize that, you know, these things won't go away. And so we have an opportunity to deal with them in a sort of fulsome manner right now through the arbitration and the task force. And so I really think it's time for all parties in good faith to say, okay, we're really going to look at these issues, right? And that does involve a neutral process, you know, and it involves really exploring the issues and the data and the evidence and the arguments. And we'll be ready for that as the faculty team, very much so.
You know, and if you and your OPSU colleagues and co-workers are successful, or even partially successful, you know, on the long-term funding issue, you know, I think it'll pay off not for everybody, especially for the students.
Definitely, and I also think too. I mean, you folks on your show, I know, deal with these broader contexts, but you know, this is just one piece of a bigger puzzle. So we're talking about the colleges, we're talking about post-secondary, but really the challenges we've been facing in the colleges are just symptoms of a broader problem of this sort of neoliberal model of bleeding public services, of gutting revenue. So, you know, the government cutting taxes steadily for the past couple of decades, and then getting to the point where public services can be critically and chronically underfunded, and then, you know, privatized in whole or in part. And this is the broader force that we're pushing back against. And this is where I do think this is an important stand to take. You know, a lot of times with these bigger issues, you can really only bite off the piece that's right in front of you. You know, and that's what we're trying to do in this sector. We're trying to say that, you know, that neoliberal model never made sense. It never worked. And it's really destroying not just the social safety net, but just all of the public services that actually add value to our lives in Ontario and Canada wide. And we're also taking a stand against this notion that, you know, the kids coming after us are never going to have a full-time job. They're never going to have that stability or security. You know, they're going to work gig to gig, and that's somehow okay, and it's not okay. And I think we're trying to say that as loudly as we possibly can.
Yeah, in fact, you know, my take on it too is, you know, your teachers or professors, and I think you have already taught your students an important lesson about fighting for justice and fighting for decent work conditions. You know, these are important lessons. They're life lessons, but they're essential.
They really are, and I think, you know, we'd like to hope that, Doug, that that's the case. I mean, we know that students, very understandably, I mean, the first emotion is probably frustration, anger, anxiety. I mean, they've been through a lot, and to a certain extent, it is true that they're caught in the middle in a process like this. Now, having said that, I agree with what you said. I think that faculty were taking the stand on very important principles, and I do think a lot of students did understand that. And so that's incredible. You know, this has been educational for our members as well, because, you know, in ways, college faculty are a privileged group. And so, you know, for these people to take a stand on what we did, you know, this wasn't wages and benefits. It wasn't that. It was about our most vulnerable members, and it was about the quality of the system. And that's really galvanized and transformed our membership. So it's very exciting to see what's happened across the system. And, you know, at all 24 faculty locals in all the different institutions, we're hearing the same incredible message. People have come together. People have really opened their own eyes to really, you know, what we're up against here in the system. So it's incredible. We've come back into the institutions changed, and I think that's going to change the institutions in turn.
Yes, yes. So, you know, kudos to all your colleagues, not just at Mohawk but across the province, you know, for the strong stand that you've all taken.
You
know,
thank you.
And you know, you mentioned about taxation and so on. You know, my take on it is in the late 90s, we had something called the Common Sense Revolution with Mike Harris. And big tax cuts and privatizations and so on.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Harris was in for 8 years, unfortunately, or mm-hmm. his government was, and then, you know, the liberals. It was sort of in my mind like good cop, bad cop.
that's
you know, the liberals came in and they didn't talk so tough. But they kept almost everything in place.
Yeah, I agree, Doug. And, you know, you see the same pattern. So that was, you know, McGuinty provincially. I completely agree. You know, changed a few things, but kept the core of the Harris program intact. And you can say the same thing about Justin Trudeau federally right
mm-hmm.
now.
Oh, yes.
You know, yeah, in terms of, you know, C-51 and, you know, pipelines and tar sands, and I mean, in so many ways, it is the same agenda. You're right, with a kinder face, you know, with a cute face, and in the sense of just then, less so for McGuinty. But I hear you, Doug. It is almost like a bit of a bait and switch, right? You think you're getting real change, and yet it's the core of those policies that have yet to be challenged. Those neoliberal policies, the idea that you cut taxes on the wealthy, you impoverish public services, and then you privatize everything, right? That model must be ended, right? We have to dismantle that. And I think that what we're seeing is the limits of political change. You know, I vote NDP, and I'm an NDP supporter, and I'm going to continue to do that, and I hope there's some change there. But I think that, you know, as important or even more so is going to be what labor movements can do, what, you know, social movements can do. You know, we need to be pushing back in every sector with whatever tools are at our disposal in order to create the momentum to roll back that. I mean, you're right with Harris, and, you know, federally it came in with Mulroney and company, but that neoliberal model must be dismantled. It's clearly not working. So that, you know, that struggle continues.
Yeah, for sure, because, you know, that underlying philosophy that workers aren't entitled to decent employment and, you know, that these tax cuts don't have impact. They certainly have enormous impact on the quality of our lives. I think we're seeing it not just in post-secondary education, but healthcare, you know, a whole range of public services are being affected, including even the administrative aspect. I was just looking at the news today about the Phoenix Pay system, and the CRA is in a mess. And, you know, let's hope that we're at the bottom. You know, like we really have to properly fund all our essential public services.
I agree, and I really do think we're in the time of the pushback. You know, and of the rolling back of this, you know, destructive, you know, financial and political regime that is neoliberalism. I do think we are seeing that pushback, you know, whether it's you look at the phenomena of Sanders in the States, or, you know, Jeremy Corbyn in Britain, and you look at you know, the sort of groundswell of different movements and you know, labor struggles and whatnot. I do think we're starting to see that, and I think that we still have a big hill to climb, but the extent to which we can link these struggles, you know, and I'm glad that you said exactly what we're fighting in post-secondary is what's happening in the hospitals. It's what's happening in social services. You know, it's what's happening in all of the government ministries in terms of slashing staff and you know, gutting the ability to enforce environmental protections. All of these things are linked. And when we make those connections, we amplify our power, and we amplify our ability to create change. And so I'm really hoping that this is just the beginning, and I'm hoping that we can, through our little piece of this, which is what we've done in the colleges, I'm hoping we can continue the momentum and continue reaching out to workers in other sectors, to other movements, and saying that, you know, this wasn't just about getting a good deal for our folks and getting us back in. This is a social movement, and it needs to continue.
Right. And that's a very positive note to end on. Kevin, thanks so much for this update and your thoughts on not just the strike, but, you know, the broader issues that the strike has raised.
Thanks so much for your interest.
Okay, and that was Kevin McKay, and he's vice president of the OPSU local at Mohawk College. We'll be back with more programming after this.